Okay, if I could have your attention, please. I have strict instructions. We're supposed to start on time and end on time. So. And I always follow the rules. Good morning, everybody. My name's Tom Heidler. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm glad to be here and be sober this morning, be a part of this. Because I live in Texas and it's what we do, so that you know we got one. My date of sobriety is October 26, 1976. It impresses me. Okay. At any rate, let's have a moment of silence and gratitude for AA's recoveries for the last 75 years, if we could, please. At this time, I would like to introduce our speakers that are here today. Kathy S., Al B., and Sean C. from Canada. So our speakers are going to speak approximately 20 minutes apiece, and practicing the old custom of ladies first, Kathy will be our first presenter. Let's welcome her. Kathy.
Hi, everybody. My name's Kathy, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. I'm sober today, but for the grace of God and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. My home group is the Arlington Tuesday Night, meets in Arlington, Massachusetts. My sobriety date is March 12, 1989. My current service position is DCM at District 22, Area 30, Eastern Mass. And that's not a mouthful. I don't know what is. That's probably the most important thing that I say here today will be that my name is Kathy and that I'm an alcoholic. The rest of what's going to come out of my mouth is I have absolutely no idea. So when God arrives, I'll let you know. Standing up here is an honor and a privilege. You know, I was not invited anywhere at the end of my drinking. For a long time at the end of my drinking, I thought my name was Get Out of Here. You know, because they were always telling me to get out of here. You know, I was not welcomed. I was definitely not invited. And life was pretty grim at the end of my drinking. You know, in a general way, I picked up a drink at a pretty young age. I was off and running. I'm a blackout drinker from the word go. I drink as much as I can, as fast as I can. I hate the taste of booze. I drink for what it talks about in the big book, the effects produced by alcohol. And that's the one and only reason why I drink. I don't drink to fit in. I don't drink to be social or any of that. When I picked up my first drink, I thought I had found the solution to all of my problems. You know, I was a kid who was in a lot of pain at a very young age. I was born in Framingham State Prison. My mother was an inmate, and I spent the first nine months of my life in prison. Funny now. It wasn't funny when I found out. Laughter's awesome. Thank you for making me feel comfortable. You know, when I went, when I picked up my first drink, like I said, I was off and running, you know. And my first drunk was, I drank as much as I could. I puked my brains out. I blacked out. I lied about it. And that was about as good as my drinking was ever going to be. And I didn't know it. You know, I didn't know that I was an alcoholic and that I didn't drink like other people. I hung around with people who drank more than I did and did worse things than I did, so I could have a gauge. When I get as bad as so-and-so, I will stop. At the end of my drinking, they were pointing the finger, when they get as bad as Kathy, they're going to stop. And, you know, what I always say about my drinking, and I can sum it up as this, is that I was always searching on the outside for the answer to an inside problem. I was always looking for that outside thing that was going to make me okay. When I get this, I'll be okay. When this happens, I'll be okay. If only this happens, I'll be all right. And I didn't know that I had alcoholism and that it was a progressive illness. I had no idea until I came here. And when I came here, it didn't even dawn on me then either. You know, I just thought that, you know, I was 25 years old and that my life was over. You know, and in the process of that, you know, a lot of things happened along the way, and I could bore you with insanity after insanity. But I'm not here to share my insanity with you. I'm trying to share my recovery with you. And what I've done is, you know, I came in here in 1989. I was 25 years old. I was the mother of two children, legally. But I was not the mother of two children. I was that person that showed up every once in a while, you know, who tried to do the right thing, but always felt short. You know, I always had really good intentions of what I was going to do. You know, and I was always gonna. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And never being able to do that, because once I put a drink in this body, all bets are off. And where I end up, your guess is as good as mine. You know, when I got here, my sponsor told me that they were taking my crystal ball away and I could no longer predict the future. And I had absolutely no idea what that meant. You know, I thought I had all the answers, and she told me I didn't know the questions. You may have an answer, but it doesn't necessarily go along with our questions. And, you know, humor for me is the thing that's got me through my life. You know, so I got here, like I said, in 1989. I thought my life was over. How was I going to function without alcohol? And what I found is that my life was just beginning. You know, that I was to have a life that I used to hear people stand at this podium and say they had a life second to none. And I would say, what kind of life did they have to begin with if this is second to none? You know, and I got here and, you know, I went to a lot of meetings and I did what I was told. You know what? I hear people coming in now. I got sponsors now that they got reasons and excuses why they can't go to meetings, why they can't do this, why they can't do that. You know, I don't know why, but when I came in, like, there were no excuses. They didn't ask me my opinion. You know what I mean? Nobody was looking for my opinion when I got here. You know, they were telling me things like, sit down front, you don't know anything. You know, you should probably not open your mouth because you have a hard time making sentences out of four-letter words. If I took the four-letter words out, there would be nothing left to say, you know. That kind of stuff when I got here, you know. And what I've done is I've built a life on that. You know, that's where I began. I began being a very angry young woman who didn't want to be here, but I knew, didn't want the alternative either. You know, and I got here and I got active in this fellowship and I started to do all of the things people told me to do. And I remember saying to my sponsor, like, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. And then she'd tell me to pick up the ashtrays because when I came in, we could smoke. And I'd say, no. She'd say, I thought you were willing to go to any lengths. You know, and what I understand today is that I am willing to go to any lengths today for my sobriety. And on any given day, that length is different. You know, some days it's just about asking for help in the morning and doing what's right, the next right thing. And, you know, sometimes it's a whole lot more than that. You know, I was taught around here is that I was supposed to trust God, clean house, and help others. And that's about as simple as it gets. You know, but I'm a good drunk because, like, I complicate the heck out of that. You know, like, when I ask for help in the morning, I was told that I need to be prepared to accept it in whatever form it comes in. And sometimes it doesn't always come in the form that Kathy thinks it should. Because, like, that book does not say, as Kathy sees it, it says, as Bill sees it. But for a long time around here, I wanted it to be what Kathy wanted. You know, for the first time, like, I had a conversation a few weeks ago, and I was talking to this woman, and she was like, I don't know if it's God's will, blah, 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 if it's my will. And I said, you know, how about your will and God's will are aligned? Like, for the first time in my life and God's will is in line. Like, I never thought that that was possible. I thought that was corny stuff. Like, so for the first, when I came around here, I got involved in the staffs. And, you know, and that's where it was for me. You know, and the first three steps were probably the hardest steps for me. You know, I knew I had a problem, you know, and it was you. I knew that. You know, we were talking before the meeting started, and, you know, I promptly admitted all of your faults. Admit mine? Oh, no, no, no. That's a whole other story. And so I did all that, you know, and I stayed sick around here for a lot of years. You know, I thought I had this down, and I forgot what AA had given me, and that everything I had in my life was on loan to me from Alcoholics Anonymous and my higher power. And I got cocky, and I got very cocky. And from 6 years sober to 8 years sober, I didn't need you people. I got this. Okay, God, I got this. You know, I can do this. I stopped asking for help. I stopped doing the things that I'm supposed to be doing around here. And I found out that I had a threefold illness. I found that out really loud and very clearly. Because physically I was not drinking, but mentally and spiritually I was bankrupt at 8 years sober. And at 8 years sober I stuck a gun in my mouth. And I pulled the trigger. And the gun jammed. And the grace of God once again entered my life. And so you can be sober in this program, or you can be in recovery. And for me, it's about being in recovery. It's about recovering from this hopeless state of mind and body, which I did not know that I could do. Because I thought, like, all I had to do was go to meetings. Just go to meetings, right? That's all we got to do? Not me. Because I found out that I was a real alcoholic. And I didn't think that when I got here. I thought, it wasn't that bad. I had a little bit of a problem. Just ask, if you're sitting in this hall today, right, and you're not sure how bad you were, just ask the people you live with. They're dying to tell you. I don't know where the comedian in me came from, but, like, she has arrived. So, 8 years sober. I'm spiritually and mentally bankrupt. And I'm going to meetings. So what do? Being the good alcoholic that I am, I double up on my meetings. Because that's what they told me. Double up on your meetings. So I was just as sick in twice as many meetings. I don't know about you, but that's what happens to me. Like, it's what I've learned, it's not about the meetings that I make. It's about the steps that I take. Amen. And so I'm sitting in a meeting one day, and this woman gets up at the podium, and she starts sharing in a way I hadn't heard in a long time. She starts talking about, you know, recovering from this hopeless state of mind and body in a way that I never heard before. She talked about trusting and relying on a power greater than herself in a way I hadn't heard. And I remember walking over to her because, like, I had been doing the whole ism thing. I sponsor myself, and I had an idiot for a sponsee. And so I go over there and I talk to this woman. I said, are you sponsoring people? She said, yeah, I only sponsor people through the steps out of the big book. And I figured if it was good enough for her, it was going to be good enough for me. You know, and I commenced this way of life, you know, and I started doing the work. You know, and every time we get to this, like, you know, you get to the third step, and I think, like, I can take a breath now. It says, followed by rigorous action. And then you get through that, and it says, followed by more action. And then you get done with that, and it says, followed by more action. So if you're questioning what this program is about, it's about action. See, I don't practice the steps anymore. I live them. You know, when I got to this 10th step process, you know, I got to the 9th step and I was like, I'm not making amends to all these people. Like, I had a list pretty long, and I'm not making amends to them all. And I found out that, like, all I had to be was willing. And today, all I have to do is be willing. And I'm pretty damn willing today. You know, my sobriety is contingent upon my spiritual condition, and I know that it also is dependent upon my willingness. And what am I willing to do today? You know, and I'm willing to show up here. I was asked months and months and months ago, was I going to San Antonio? And I'm like, yeah, of course I am. Like, once you come to one of these, like, you don't want to not come. You know, I've been to Minneapolis, I've been to Toronto, and now I'm here. And there's no way I was going to miss this. And so when I was asked if I was going, I didn't know that I was being asked because my name was going to go into the hat. But I willingly did that, you know, because I am involved in service today. You know, I can never repay Alcoholics Anonymous. So the growth for me through the 10th step is that I can admit when I'm wrong today. You know, because I couldn't admit I was wrong. I would fight you to the end, tooth and nail. We were talking before the meeting started. I always had to have the last word, you know, and the word. You know, and today I know it's not always about being right, because sometimes I am right, and sometimes I'd much rather be happy. You know, like, I don't have to go to every fight I'm invited to, though I go to a lot of them. You know, but the beautiful thing in all of this for me has been that I don't have to fight alcohol anymore. I'm not walking around like I used to walk around like, I'm not drinking today. Like, how are you? I'm not drinking today. Really, how are you? I'm not drinking today. And today, if you ask me how I'm doing, the first words out of my mouth are awesome. You know, I'm doing awesome today. You know, I have a life that I would never have imagined. And I know I don't have the house on the hill with the white picket fence and all of the things that I thought that I wanted. What I have today is peace and serenity. You know, that I learned around here that serenity is not the absence of chaos. It's the ability to deal with it. And through the steps, I'm able to do that. And especially through the 10th step. Like, I stopped fighting alcohol long time ago. Like, I can't tell you the last time I thought on a conscious decision about drinking. Like, it's been removed. You know, and this is the way that I live my life today. You know, I live it happy, joyous, and free most of the time. You know, because I can revert back to old behaviors really quickly. So I think my time is just about up. So I'm going to end in my usual way by saying that when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had two things left in my life, a leather jacket and an attitude. Today I have three things in my life that no one in this world can take from me but me. It's my sobriety, my dignity, and my self-respect. And for that, I thank all of you.
Thank you, Kathy. And now we have another East Coast person, Al, New York City.
My name is Al. I am an alcoholic. Well, we can close in the usual manner, right? Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Look to your left and look to your right. Kind of like look back, look forward. Wow, what a concept. What a concept. They say drunks are cheap, but baby, 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 it's some money been paid out to get up in this camp.
Woo!
Huh? What?
Woo, woo!
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm seeing these little green things all around town. Four-star restaurants. Hotels. People opening the door for me. What a... Let me in places these days. Huh? What a concept. What a concept. Oh. One of the old-timers at my home group. I sobered up in a group called First Things First in New York City, off 96th Street. My sobriety date is August the 12th, 1993. I was separated from alcohol for the last time. I had a sponsor, you know, I didn't hear all this stuff. I got set up. I was sitting in the back of an AA meeting. For those who didn't hear the message and stopped, it took a little while, you know, with all them coins that was lies. They had 6 days and 60 days and didn't have a 6 minutes, you know. Got the year coin and didn't have a 3 days shaking it. Yeah, I'm one of those. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That first step was a big one for me. But I heard something here. I heard something here that I had never heard before. Where in the world did they come up with stuff like, welcome home? I think we should get some shares in Kleenex because, you know, that Saturday night in June of 1990 where I had a fight with a friend who just said, you know what, you're disgusting. You're just an effing alcoholic. And he ended up in an emergency room, and that next day, I went to the North Shore University Hospital meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there was this little Irish woman who said, welcome home, the war is over. She could have said, yabba-dabba-doo. She could have said, hey, you know what I mean? Anybody in here know about the language of the heart? Anybody know about it? You know, one of them days when everything went wrong. Have you had one yet? Yeah. And you get to an AA meeting and somebody goes, and all of a sudden it don't matter no more. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Yeah. There's some alcoholics in here, right? Okay. Yeah, you know, didn't get the job, ain't had but a couple of dollars left in the pocket, had to get the 99-cent special at McDonald's, and I'm sitting up in here and everybody's saying they're grateful, and I'm like, for what? And then the magic happens. Anybody know that magic that happens that by the end of the meeting with the serenity prayer, you're holding hands, and somebody say, what was wrong with you, Al? And I'm like, when? What? That language of the heart and that miracle that the old timers talked about with grace happens. Over and over and over again. And we have the opportunity to come to places like this. I was on my way here this morning, and there was a woman outside who said, you know what? This is a great place to do my fourth step, because I can do a third one here, because these folks are going everywhere. I'll never see them again. Yeah. I can do a thorough fourth step here and give it away, and I ain't got to worry about it. I can do a real thorough fourth step here. So if there's anyone that want to take that and run with it, by all means. I came from a town, Pensacola, Florida, born in the 50s, as a matter of fact, 1950. And I born in one of those houses on the corner where on Friday nights, you know, the men came with the beer. And they had the liquor in the little corrugated box so they wouldn't break. You know, that's sacrilegious, break a bottle of liquor. My God, that thought still hurts my heart. But anyway, you know, yeah. Don't be dropping no liquor bottle. Drop the water bottle. But it was that big $100 word we have in here called camaraderie. And it would happen in our house on Fridays and Saturday nights, where all of the friends of my family would come. Hey, honey, how you doing? Here's that $2 I owe you. Oh, how's the children? And as children, we stood by a door. Everybody would have went to jail if they had child protective services, because look here, back then it didn't matter. We were seeing stars before we could spell Hollywood. They didn't. Yeah. So my brother and I would stand by the door, and y'all would give us change and stuff, and those who knew us knew I liked ice cream sandwiches, so they said, I got the little ice cream. You know, and I can hear the chicken hitting the grease right now. You know, and the men in the room, in the dining room, riffling the cards and talking, and my mom and all of them passing them the beer and the liquor and the food smelling in the kitchen. And then about 9 or 10 o'clock at night, you hear something like, I never liked you no way. And then it was on. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Yeah, it would be on, you know. And 3 o'clock in the morning as a child, going into the bathroom and slipping up on the vomit where somebody didn't quite make it to the bathroom. And anybody know about those mixed signals? You know, well, what is he doing with her? I thought he was married to, you know, early on, you know, Rev and the... And then we'd all get in church on Sunday morning. What a friend we have in Jesus. So this is what it was like coming up in our house in Pensacola, Florida. A lot of mixed messages. You know, it was happy up until 10 o'clock, and then, you know, chairs with one leg missing, you have to put the brick under the dining room to make it kind of level kind of stuff. And on one hand, it was funny, and on the other hand, it was sad and tragic. And on Sunday morning, anybody know that phrase, walking on eggshells? Because you knew you was going to get it. You didn't know what you was going to do, but you was going to get it. And it started a series of nevers. Anybody know about the nevers? I never started a series of nevers. I had an uncle, briefly called Tom, and they say something had happened to him in the war. These are my snapshots of alcohol. In the war, and the word was, don't give Tom no money until he finishes work. And if you broke that rule, you'd have half the yard clean and the other half all crazy. Or there might be the sink might be fixed and it might be worse than it started. And Tom is laying out up under azalea bush drunk and passed out somewhere. And you'd shake him and you'd ask Uncle Tom, say, Uncle Tom, what happened? And he'd say stuff like, oh, you know, I was just thinking about 4 years ago, old Butch died. Butch was our German Shepherd. And I had to get me a drink because, you know, just think about him. Or I was remembering World War II, you know. And then he'd real slyly say, don't get drunk without a reason. You know, so he'd always have a reason. Every time you found him blacked out, knocked out, full of sand and insects all over him. Our book talks about the sad, pitiful life of the alcoholic. And I didn't know it then. I'm just coming up. These are snapshots I would get. And Tom was the character that you would see in the morning with his head hung down. And they didn't know nothing about alcoholism. See, I come from a place where they said you had to have backbone. Y'all, anybody ever heard that? You just ain't got enough backbone, you know? You ain't got enough willpower. Stand up straight. That's what's wrong with you. You're a disgrace to the family. And that's the kind of stuff went around. Those were the solutions, you know? So he would just look like a whooped dog early in the morning, you know. He'd have his head all bent down and, you know, grandmama and them be preaching to him, you need to stop this, stop this. But he knew that after they got through, they was going to go in that little purse or that pocket and give him some money, and he'd jetline it to the liquor store. The sad, tragic deaths, he was coming back across Cervantes Street and got hit. And I'm saying this to give homage to those who don't make it to these rooms. And I don't mean this to be funny, though it sounds kind of crazy, but he looked better in death than I had ever seen him. His hair was cut. He had on a clean shirt, because, you know, Uncle Tom always smelled like that three-day pee. You know what I'm saying? Because it wasn't about bathing. It was about drinking. So, you know, he always had a little odor on him. But he had his hair cut with a little part in it, his hands across him. You remember that thing you talk about, rest in peace? For some of us who have this chronic, fatal, progressive disease of alcoholism, that's the only place we find peace. That's where my brother found peace. He could not find it in this world. He did not know the freedom that comes from our basic text in the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So Tom got hit. He laid up there in that casket looking good. And boy, did they lie on Tom. You know, they preached him into some place that he wasn't even thinking about going. You know? Yeah, yeah. So again, this was just a series of nevers. Nevers. And then came my day out in the backyard of St. Joseph Catholic School in Pensacola, Florida, where somebody told me to try something, and my world went from black and white to technicolor. They had a movie I called Waiting to Exhale. That day I exhaled. It did not matter. Nothing mattered at all, you know. And as a result of that, there were just many years. Presidents was getting elected. I identified with the guy in my home group one time that said, Gulf War, when was that? You know, it just wasn't, you know. Monica who? You know, it was about that next one, baby. I wasn't going to tell you that because I didn't know. Old Thomas said, I didn't know. I just didn't know that I didn't know. I just kept getting beat down to this disease. And that man I talked about who had these principles in his life, but he wasn't a braggart. Jake Harris is not a braggart. He's not a boaster. He simply said this. He was telling me this morning. He was reminding me of that statement when we talked. He says, I never want to go home broke on a Sunday morning saying, Dad, I did it again. When he said that, it was like, who's that masked man? Yeah, I was just like, wow. That's the kind of stuff, you know. Though he had recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body, that's what he shared that caught me. I was not impressed. You know, when you've been a drunk on the block for a while, it's hard to impress us. So all of the, you know, anybody that can rattle it off and bop, 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 you know, but you get somebody that talks to that inside. Being broke on a Sunday morning walking home saying, Dag, I did it again. Our book calls it that alcoholic torture. And I asked him to sponsor me. And he started me. Someone had a Beyond Your Wildest Dreams tour. They must have got it from us because I don't know your experience, but this experience has been beyond my wildest dreams. And that doesn't always mean good. No, at all. You know what the old timers say, don't forget to breathe, because, you know, listen, stuff come down the pike. Coming through this process of these steps in our basic text and hearing all this stuff and just resisting. Anybody know about just resisting the truth? Well, they say first the truth will piss you off, then it sets you free. Just getting mad and wondering why. You know, and I called Jake, and Jake said, your face all tight. What's wrong with you? You know, they talk about, you know, we are men who lost their legs. They never grow new ones. What the? You know, and I'm sad to say, he always, well, if you don't, you know, like what we have, you know, I don't know what to tell you, Al, you know. But unfortunately, I had years of that PMS, that pain, that misery, and that suffering. Anybody know about the dereliction of alcohol? James Brown called it a hole in your soul. It doesn't matter whether you're from Park Avenue or Park Bench. That waking up 3 o'clock in the morning, like, the liquor's gone. You don't want to talk to no other human being. There must be one. Let me look in the trash can. Maybe I got to put it over there in the hamper. Just... you know, the lost weekend kind of fear that came up. coming through the unmanageability and the powerlessness that they talked about in that first step. The reason that it took so long to get separated from alcohol is because I thought I had some power. Yeah. What? That was that gin. Leave that gin alone. Drink some vodka. You can't smell it. You won't get wrote up at work. You know, all of, I had, you know, those sponsors I had out there, of course, you know, they had all that wisdom and stuff. And coming to our first step and coming into that second one that had a word in there, those minor details, could restore me to sanity. Could restore me to sanity. To what lengths are you willing to go, Al? I'm one of them bargaining. You buy two, I buy three, you know. And the pain of being abstinent, of sitting here fighting tooth and nail with a very patient sponsor who walked me through these, through this book, really. We call it a process, but and as the page turned, and I couldn't wait. He said, Al, I know you've been waiting on this one because you've been pissed off for a long time. Make a list of all the people you pissed off about in some of these institutions, and boy, did I get to writing. You talk about a spiritual experience. You know, they set you up. I didn't know it was a column over there talking about, well, where was I, selfish, self-centered, dishonest. Where was I wrong? What? You know? And then it was a nice autumn day in October, bringing all of these papers and sitting in Central Park and revealing the stuff that we had processed and wrote. And then making a list, because that was the column that was the eye-opener for me. Setting aside the wrongs others had done. You see, because it was always your fault. Now I got to drop the blame game. What? Vital experiences that were spiritual in nature. Something called forgiveness began to happen. You know, I'm one of them grudging alcoholics. I can hold on to a grudge. Baby, 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 you think I'm going to forget? Forgive what? What? You know? And all of a sudden, my heart softened. You know, and coming on through and writing that list, and God got a funny sense of humor. Though my neighbors were first. People started dying and started going home to funerals, and guess who would be sitting there after the church service? Somebody on that list to make amends to. You know? Go to a hospital to visit a friend with cancer, and who come up to the hospital? Somebody on that never list. So my nevers got done first, not by my permission. I need to tell you, I'm not here by my permission either. I'm here by grace, totally by grace. You know, whether I like the taste or not, some I like, some I didn't like, but I had to drink. Look here. Woo, talk about exhale. All that stuff and people and fears. There was a piece that was instructed to me when I made my direct amends. And it was to shut up and listen and let them tell me about my alcoholism. Oh, boy. Yeah, you talk about humility. And unfortunately, from that, I got another list. Had to process some more stuff. And, you know, and those old grudges that, you know, talk about delusional nature of alcoholism. There was a friend of mine that I had ducked for over 30 years because I thought I had stole some money from him. So every time I would come to town, he'd always want to see me. And my grandmother, God bless the dead, would tell me that Bo had stopped by and this and that. And I didn't want to see him because I thought I had stole some money from him. I'm a blackout drinker, so I got a lot of delusional stuff going on, ladies and gentlemen. Coming upon this part of our process and sitting down with him, it wasn't me. It was Fuzzy that had clipped him. So here I am avoiding a man for 20 or 30 years who was a friend from childhood over something that I didn't even do. This process is awesome. I fight it tooth and nail, but the grace and the freedom that it gives me is way beyond my wildest dreams. And we come to 10, where we stop fighting. You know an alcoholic don't want to stop fighting? Anybody know one? Anybody know stopping fighting? Anyone or anything? Oh, no. And here I was with this debating game going on, trying to cut this thing off. Better take it out. Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about... Yeah. There we go. God calling. Okay. And entering that freedom intent, which is what we're talking about today. And the person before me, I don't know when. And you know they talk about relationships. They say you want to know how their sobriety is. You ask their partner. And one day, all of a sudden, these very phenomenal words came off my lips. You're right. And another earth-shaking mind revelation came one day. I said the word, okay. Like my sister in recovery said, because all of a sudden, oh, no, this must be God, huh? I had to have the last word. I just had, because see, it's your fault. I told you the toilet paper is supposed to be turned this way. And what is this $20 that came out of the account this morning? Couldn't be about food, No, no, no. I'd just like to thank y'all for allowing me to speak here. It's a great opportunity. There was a movie called The Bucket List. I'll tell you how I got here. Yeah. My mother passed away 2 years ago. She was separated from alcohol in January of 1961. And Fatima passed away 2 years ago in May in Mobile, Alabama. And you talk about the process of the steps, having a mother, a recovered mother in Alcoholics Anonymous. I won't even tell you the word that I called her before Alcoholics Anonymous took over. But it went from that word and a sponsor who taught me about 10 minutes at a time on the phone and lovingly hanging it up. Somewhere between the 7th year and the 10th year, she became my mother. She was no longer the B word. She became my mother. And then somewhere I was graced about my 10th year for her to become a friend. So God separated me from my friend. And one of the things that came to me when I visited her grave was to make a bucket list. And on my bucket list was to attend an international convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I stayed sober. I made meetings. I continued to try to live, not analyze our program. And as a result, I've had the fortunate opportunity to share with my fellow alcoholics in San Antonio, Texas. Thank you.
Thank you, Al. And moving right along, let's hear from our neighbor from the north, Shane.
Good morning, friends. My name is Sean, and I am alcoholic. I am so, so grateful to be here this morning, and I am so, so grateful to be sober today. And, man, what a somber group we've had this morning. I hope you all can understand me with my Canadian accent, eh? Oh. I've had the good fortune to be sober since July 20th, 2001. My home group is the Fire Hall Step and Tradition group of Alcoholics Anonymous in North Delta, British Columbia. We meet on Thursday nights at 7:30, and we use this as our text, the 12 and 12, which I firmly believe, along with the big book, is where we find all the answers we're looking for. I'm told the big book is going to catch on one day. May I suggest this is a wonderful adjunct too. I opened it this morning to have a quick look because I, in true alcoholic fashion, Didn't even think about step 10 for the past 3 months. But I have highlighted a whole lot of stuff in here. So forgive me if I'm flipping through looking for stuff that I was thinking about a couple years ago. I wish I had something to hang my alcoholism on. I grew up in a middle-class home in middle-class suburbia in British Columbia, Canada. My mother was a school teacher. My father sold freight service. I wanted for basically nothing, except maybe a little more attention. And I sought that out in every way possible. And a lot of it was negative because I did a lot of silly, stupid things. And I developed some habits that over the years I got really, really good at. And my behaviors as a child progressed and accompanied me like close friends into my adult life. And as a result, I think I stopped maturing at about 12. Maybe 11. No, it was 10. And life as a result got a little bit difficult, you know. I'm told I was hyperactive and attention deficit disorder and a few other things, and I was allergic to oranges, and that seemed like a good enough reason. I was the shortest in my class for years. Grade 7, I was the shortest kid in grade 2. So I felt a little inferior to start off with. And when I hit my teen years, I discovered that alcohol did for me what I wasn't able to do for myself. And it made me 10 feet tall and bulletproof. It allowed me to connect with people that I wouldn't have anything to do with otherwise. It allowed me to converse. It allowed me to dance, date women, and it allowed me to be the life of the party, and it allowed me to fit in, and that's what I was looking for. I was looking for that way to be a part of. And I found it, and it worked. Worked for a long time. There was, you know, I don't know if I'm fortunate or not, but I think I was fortunate that it did work for a little while. I don't know what I would have done if I'd been a blackout drinker from the beginning. Unfortunately, I remember almost everything. Which really sucks. So if you're on my list and I haven't met up with you yet and you're in here, I'm sorry. And I know that sorry is just the announcement that the amend is coming, but truly, I'm living it. We're trying to. But yeah, life was interesting with alcohol. I was able to do things that I didn't think I'd be able to do otherwise, and I grew up in middle class suburbia. My mother didn't drink. My father didn't drink either. He indulged in other things, but he knows, and I know today that he is an alcoholic, and he struggles, and. He hasn't found these rooms yet. I hope that one day he does, because the life that I lead today is truly unbelievable. But we'll get to that. Yeah, I found Alcoholics Anonymous in 1993, went to a few meetings for a little while, read the steps on the wall one night, got it all under control, and off I went. And 9 months later, I celebrated the fact that I was not an alcoholic, and I had a beer with dinner, and 2 days later, I was loaded. And all of those things that I hadn't done yet, I did. And I properly qualified myself for this program, came back in July of 2001. And by God's grace and the fellowship of this program and the 12 steps, I've managed to stay sober. Now, in the beginning, when I came back this time, I wanted to share my experience, my strength, and my hope with you. as I had a lot to say. Today I stand here and I'm happy that you share your experience and your strength so that I may keep my hope. You know, as my wife and I were walking over here from the hotel this morning, she said, "So, was it this morning or was it last night? I don't know. What are you going to say?" I said, "I have absolutely no idea." You know, a few years ago, I'd have had it all written down and on flip cards. I'd have been able to tell you exactly what I was going to share about. And today, all I can say is I want to share with you that we do recover. And we do. Well, I'm in a state of recovering, but I have recovered. The big book tells me that. I've recovered from that seemingly hopeless state. All right? And I am so grateful for that. My wife has never seen me drink. My kids have never seen me drink. My mother, who has seen me drink, doesn't have to live with that anymore. Right? She doesn't have to see that. And I am... I'm a good son today. And that's as a result of doing these steps. Right? The tenth step, which is what we're talking about this morning, is I'm told, and keep an open mind because this is just stuff my sponsor told me, but is the beginning of my maintenance. Right? It's the beginning of my new life. Right? When I sat down to do the steps the first time, I was with a group of guys who had varying degrees of various lengths of sobriety and varying degrees of sobriety too, but and they said, just do the best you can. So I did the best I could, and then I did them again and again and again and again, and I'm going to keep doing them until I get them right, but. I discovered somewhere along the way that there's really no point in doing the steps unless I make an honest effort to change who I am. You know, I didn't get here because I was happy with Sean. I didn't get here because my life was giving me everything that I had expected from it. And, well, it was giving me everything that I had designed it to give me, but I didn't get here because I was happy in my life. I didn't one Friday night say, well, there's not really any movie playing I want to see. Let's go to an AA meeting. You know, I got here because something wasn't working right. And I had tried absolutely everything. I'd been to doctors and psychologists, and I'd taken pills and, you know, transcendental meditation and neurolinguistic programming and all. I mean, everything, right? Probably didn't try a couple of those, but they sound good. Maybe I should. But I tried absolutely everything I could think of, and it wasn't working. I'd even tried this, and it wasn't working. But that's because I wasn't working. I didn't do anything. I showed up and sat in the back, came in 5 minutes after it started, left before the Serenity Prayer at the end, and didn't make that effort to fit in like I did when I was a teenager and I drank to fit in. And something clicked one day. And I thought, I've got to do something different. I've got to see why you're smiling. You know? There's been a lot of laughter in here this morning. That's more laughter than people hear in an entire month, and we get it in an hour. That's phenomenal. But you know, I reached that state, Al and Kathy, is it, where. And we come from completely different backgrounds. We're a few years apart in age. We come from different parts of the world. And yet, we got here because we felt exactly the same way. Right? I don't know if anybody can relate to that complete and utter despair, that incomprehensible demoralization. That waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and just going, oh my God, where is my life? Is this what I was put here for? And I knew I wasn't. I knew I wasn't put here to lead the life that I was leading. And something had to change. Something. So I got here and I got into the steps, and I realized that there was no point in doing them unless I was going to make a concerted effort to become the man that God designed me to be. And step 10 is really where it begins for me. I mean, I identify all that stuff in the previous steps, all those things that I was doing that, and those character traits and I like to call them personality conflicts that I was filled with. I've identified them and honestly asked God to remove them from me. Humbly, on my knees, asked God to remove those defects of character from me. And it's, you know, I've heard God moves mountains, but I got to bring a shovel. Right? He's not going to do it without a whole heck of a lot of work from me. Right? And it's work. It is work. I sobered up in 2001. I got married in 2006. And my wife's here, so she's keeping me honest. So far, her head's going up and down, so I'm doing okay. But, you know, I sobered up in 2001, got married in 2006, but I still didn't have a whole lot of skills, right? Relationships, come on. I mean, the longest lasting relationship I'd had was with Molson Canadian. Right? And I got to do this life with a wife and kids and a house and a dog and another dog and a cat and I've got to do this. How? Right? And the best way for me to do that is get the hell out of the way. And the only way for me to get out of the way is to be continuously working on getting rid of those character conflicts. And step 10 helps me to do that. It's not a once a day thing. I mean, for me it is, just because I forget, right? I forget. I get so wrapped up in everything that's going on up here in my head that I forget on a continuous basis throughout the day. Oops. Right? Oops. And sometimes it's oops, 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 oops. Right? And there's, you know, the safest I am is right before I get out of bed in the morning. And, man, I can really mess things up before breakfast. And, you know, with teenage kids, that can be difficult, right? But I try, and God cares about us trying. You know, it's in the step it says it's about progress, not perfection. It's about giving it our honest effort because, you know, God doesn't care about our ability. He cares about our availability. He just wants us to be there and be present and give it our all. Right? You know, I'm sometimes fond of saying all you can do is all you can do and all you can do is enough, but if you're not doing all you can do, then you're not doing enough. And some days I'm not doing all I can do. My current service position is a district committee member for District 42 in Area 79. Come and see our hospitality booth at the Grand Hyatt later. Here's my commercial. And that's about all I can do right now as far as service goes. And I have a home group and I give all I can to my home group and I have my wife and kids and I give all I can to them and I have parents and siblings and aunts and uncles and fortunately no grandchildren yet. But when they come along, I'm going to give them more than I can. But and I give as much as I can back to this program because I don't know where I'd be without it. I really, truly do not know where I would be. And to think that this program has helped over 2 million people in over 100 and how many countries? 150, 180. To not give that back to, not give it back to the program and to not carry that message to the alcoholic who still suffers is unconscionable to me. I just couldn't imagine going through life saying, thanks, I got mine. Where are you getting yours? Right? That just can't happen for me. But where was I going? Progress, not perfection. I don't know. Step 10 for me is it's not so much today about my actions. It's got a lot more to do with my thoughts. Right? When I got back here in this last time, I was told when I was going through the steps, you can act your way into better thinking. Well, the actions have changed, but the thoughts are still there. Sometimes I don't think the way I would imagine a serene, happy alcoholic would think. And if I'm not careful about changing those thoughts and turning them into more positive thoughts that are aligned with what God has in store for me, then I'm in danger of picking up on those old actions. And I just don't want to do that anymore. You know? My life today is absolutely phenomenal. I've got a good career. I have the ability to travel to Texas. I mean, you don't get much more southern hospitality than Texas. Right? Just before I close, I'll tell you why this trip is particularly phenomenal for me. A friend of mine from Canada decided that he would move to Dallas, Texas, and he met a wonderful woman, and they bought a house and have two wonderful children, but I've seen him exactly twice in the past 8 years. And so we decided to combine our trip. We went to Dallas and spent some time there and then drove down to San Antonio for the convention, and he wasn't sure he was going to be able to make it. And through an awful lot of prayer and a little bit of juggling, he's managed to come down here and attend his first convention. And what a gift that I'm able to be here and spend that time with him, because who knows when I'll see him next, right? It's a long ways from Vancouver to Dallas. But I'm just so grateful. And there's a couple of people that we've seen here today that are in Ontario that we made good friends with when they were living in BC with us, and man, a whole lot of friends I haven't met yet. So I love each and every one of you. I hope you have a wonderful time at the convention, and thank you for allowing me to share.